from them. And as we do that tonight, as we get acquainted with the 12 disciples, you may be surprised to find out that at least one of them is very much like you as we go through them. One of the purposes of this is to remind us that God uses ordinary people like you, like me, to do extraordinary things. We need to be reminded of that. He chose these 12 disciples after about a year after his baptism. He had been working miracles. He had been preaching. He'd been traveling all around Galilee and had a lot of followers. Now, look with me in Luke chapter 6 and verse 14. These are the ones that he handpicks. Simon, whom he also named Peter, verse 14, and Andrew, his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Simon, called Zelotes, and Judas, the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, which also was the traitor. 12 guys, diverse personalities, diverse political views, in fact. Okay, now just hang on to that for just a moment. Matthew was a tax collector who had sold out to the Roman government. Simon was this fierce Jewish patriot who had wanted nothing to do with the Roman government. They were complete polar opposites on the political view of things, which shows that Jesus is able to transform and use people together regardless of their political views, folks. As we look at these 12, we're going to see four characteristics present in all of them that will show why God can use you and me, okay? They were real people, folks. They were average. They were normal people with the same temperaments and weaknesses and fears that you and I have. Not one of them had any great talents. Not one of them had any great intellectual abilities or great influence. I had someone come to me one time years ago when it was about the time at church to begin looking for deacons. We had a couple of open spots, and someone suggested someone else. This was at another church because they're a good businessman. Well, I listened. I went to 1 Timothy. I looked at the qualifications for deacon, and I didn't see that in there. We don't have to be great. We don't have to be important. We don't have to be famous, rich, smart, good-looking to be used by God. Look at Peter and John, for example. Acts chapter 4 and verse 13 says, "Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and perceived that they were unlearned men and ignorant men, the members of the Sanhedrin, they were astonished at the boldness of Peter and John." Why? Because they were unlearned, they were ignorant. Not stupid, just uneducated. That's very ordinary, isn't it? These 12 men, no degrees, no Bible college, no seminary, not even a 1 year at a Bible institute. Folks, God finds his workers among the ordinary. He does use the educated. Paul is an example of that. He does use wealthy people, Abraham. He does use powerful people like David. But most often, he just uses ordinary people. People that work 9-to-5 jobs. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 27, it says, "But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty." In 1 Corinthians 1:29, it says that no flesh should glory in his presence. Why does God use the ordinary? So no one can boast of their greatness. No one can get an overinflated view of themselves within the church. Like, I provide half of this church's income, therefore I'm important. If it weren't for me, if someone has that attitude, my thought is, if it weren't for you and your attitude, we could probably do more, because you're holding us back. So these 12 men, they were ordinary. But notice, secondly, they were young. Uh-oh, where am I going with that? They were young. They weren't old. They weren't mature. They weren't experienced. John was the youngest, late teens. Peter was the oldest in his mid-20s. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean only young people can serve? That God can't use older people? I know some older people think that God can't use them anymore. That's not true. These people that we see in the Bible, that we read about, those of you that read your Bible through every year, you know the ones because you read about them every year. Do you ever see any of them retire? God uses them until the day they go on home to glory. Now, they're not doing the same as they did when they were 20, no doubt, but God is still using them. Look at what he did with these younger people, Christ. He trained them. These 12 young people, he spent 3 years training them. I want us to remember a couple of things, those of us that are older. First of all, I want us to remember the young will soon take over the ministry. Okay? The young will take over the ministry. So, they need to be trained. Doesn't that make sense? They need to be trained. What do we do when those that are serving in a church, not just this church, but any church, what do we do when those that are serving in a church are getting older and there just doesn't seem to be anyone to take their place? What do? Train some, right? If there's no one to take that person's place, start training some to take that person's place. No, better yet, start training some to take your place. See, I just wanted to personalize that a little bit. This is what's called discipleship. This is called mentoring. If a church is of any size and everyone that's serving is serving with a cane or a walker, I would say shame on them. They haven't trained anyone to replace them. Second thing that I want you to remember, as we get older, we tend to get into ruts and our worship can become routine and dry as we get older. I mean, come on, some of you guys that have lighter colored hair, okay, or no hair. How many times have you sung Amazing Grace, really? That is an amazing song, isn't it? An amazing hymn. And yet, does it have the same impact as it once did? See, we do tend to get into ruts. The older we get, this is true as well, the older we get, the less we like new ways. The less we like new ideas. The less we like different ways. Or different, you know, like just a different way of doing something. It's not wrong. And your way maybe was right. But let's not think that our way is the only right way. Right? And as we get older, we tend to not like different ways or different ideas because we just don't like change. I just spent a weekend with some family. Not even a weekend. It was like 24 hours. Whew. Did I tell you my grandson was here? That was wonderful. Okay? All right? And after they left, my wife and I spent the next several hours just cleaning the house, putting everything back in order. We got done about 11 o'clock, and I sat down on the couch, and I did this. And my wife starts chuckling at me. We just like order, and we don't like things different. And as we get older, I think it gets worse, or so I've been told. Sunday school class that I was teaching several years ago, it was the retired folks class, and I was the Sunday school teacher. And I was announcing this grand idea, this new thing that we were going to do, this new activity or new way of doing something. And I had, bless her heart, okay, I had this lady in my class raise her hand. She says, "Pastor, I'm sure that's good, but you just got to understand, we're old. We don't like change. We need to heed this admonition that Paul gives us in God's Word, folks, okay? 1 Timothy 4:12 says this, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity." Okay, so we generally understand that verse. There's two parts to it. We understand that verse in its greater context. Paul, speaking to Timothy, this young preacher, young, okay, Timothy, don't be bothered by anyone who has a problem with your age or with the way you do things. I'm kind of expanding a little bit there. Don't let your age stop you from reaching outside of your comfort zone. Younger people, that's for you. Don't let your younger age stop you from trying something new that you've never done before, something that you've never tried before, never thought you could do. Don't let that stop you from God using you, okay? But then there's the other side of this, and I don't know if you've ever considered this before. That first phrase of that verse, thank you for leaving that up there, look at it. Let no one despise thy youth. I'm going to flip that coin around and just look at the other side. If you are older, don't despise the younger. That word despise means don't think against the younger. Now, the younger, what are we dealing with there? We're dealing with new people that are coming up behind us. They're doing things a new way, a different way, and sometimes we have the tendency to despise or think against the ways that they're doing it. Don't dismiss the younger. Don't criticize the way someone else does it. They can't do it like you do. True. Obvious. They can't do it like you once used to do it. Folks, listen. You have had years of experience. You have had trial and error as your teacher over the years, which has allowed you to be able to perfect it to the level of perfection that you were at. Let them try. Let them err. Let them learn, just like you did. They may not do it like you did, ever. That's okay. Think about it. If God, who is sovereign over everything, if God wanted it done just like you did it, you'd still be doing it. So one way to look at this is, okay, God must want it done a little differently now. So let's look at a number three here. These men were often disappointing. In this series, we're going to look at the imperfections and the weaknesses of the 12 disciples. Let me give you an example. The disciples, they hear the teaching of Jesus on faith. They saw the power of Jesus in his miracles. On one particular day, there was a series of miracles that they witnessed. They saw the healing of Peter's mother-in-law. And now they're sailing across the sea. A storm arises. You remember that, don't you? Where's Jesus? He's in the back of the boat sleeping. The disciples awake Jesus. They tell him they're going to drown. What does Jesus do? He rebukes the water. He rebukes the storm. Everything becomes calm instantly. And then do you remember what he said to them? In Luke chapter 8, he said this, "Where is your faith?" After everything that they had witnessed that day, where's your faith? Can you imagine? I don't know if Jesus was ever disappointed. That'd be something to chew on, I guess. I would be disappointed. After everything that, let's say, I did in front of their eyes, and they still doubt me? Where is your faith? These men were often disappointing. Here's another example. In Luke chapter 9, the people of the city had made it known that the disciples were not welcome there. They were rejected. Ever feel that way? Yeah, we've been there. The people didn't want what they had. The people didn't like their ideas. We've all been there. In Luke chapter 9 and verse 54, here's what James and John say to the Lord. "Shall we command fire to come down and consume them?" Aren't you glad you don't have that power? I'm glad you don't have that power. I'd been gone a long time ago, maybe. Now, that's not exactly a demonstration of love and grace and forgiveness that Jesus was demonstrating for them. Jesus, he calls James and John the sons of thunder because of their hot tempers, their impatience. There's some of us right there. Let me give you another example. Luke chapter 22, there was strife. Oh, no. You mean they didn't get along either? Aren't you glad we're not like them? Here they are at the Last Supper. Jesus is teaching about his cross, the very thing he came to earth for. The most important thing he came to earth for. He's teaching them about his cross, and they're arguing about crowns and who's going to get what. Now, folks, in spite of all of their failures, their selfishness, their sin, Jesus loves them to the very end. That never changed. He never gives up on them. No matter how many times they failed. No matter what we do or how we fail, God never gives up on us. And number four, all of these 12, minus Judas, they were transformed. Our master takes these men who are diamonds in the rough, by the way, so are we. And he transformed them into what Paul calls the pillars of the church. Can you imagine that? These uneducated men, they're not just really good. Is Jerry here? Window washers. I love Jerry's job washing the windows. He does an excellent job. Talk about a frustrating job to do. Because within 1 hour, you could have some little handprints on that glass. Again, just like that. He just goes back and does it again and again and again. Now, folks, by the way, I can understand when the glass down here looks like someone's been licking all over the glass. I get that. But when it's up here this high, what is going on? Who's doing that, folks, really? We're going to put cameras by these doors and you're going to see you on YouTube, okay? Or something. Christ takes these men and transforms them. Revelation 21:14, it says, "And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb." Folks, we're going to see that when we get to heaven. These ordinary people who just allowed God to use them, did not let anyone despise their youth. They allowed themselves to be trained. They had someone to train them. That's our job. And then they just yielded to what God wanted. They failed. They learned. Trial, error, learn. And God kept using them. And they changed the world. We will find the names of the 12 disciples written there in the foundation of that city. When you go to Washington, D.C., you've never been there. I know many of you have. You're going to see throughout that city buildings, monuments with names on them. The names of Washington and Lincoln and others. Getting to know these men like we're going to, it should inspire us. Because if Jesus can use people like them, He can use you and me. Even though we're from Taylorville, He could use someone here to change the world. Does that sound extraordinary to you? It is. Because it is extraordinary. Is it possible? Yes. Anyone in here. God could use someone in here to change the world. He could use you. He could use me. He can use us because He can transform us to be usable. There's an old legend that says the angel Gabriel met Jesus as He arrived in heaven. I know it's normally Peter at the gates, right? This one is Gabriel. And he meets with Jesus after Jesus gets to heaven. Jesus tells him that He has left His work to the 12 disciples. Knowing what kind of men they are, the astonished Gabriel says, "What are your plans if they fail?" To which Jesus replies, "I have no other plans." So His plan for them is the same plan He has for us today. What if we fail? He has no other plans. We are His plan. Now, this story is a legend that was true then as it is now, folks. If we don't do what Christ has called us to do, who will? Or maybe we should ask, what will? Well, there is no what, because He didn't plan for a what to do His will. He didn't entrust His ministry to angels. He could have. But no, He entrusted His ministry to you and me. God can use you because He used the 12 disciples who were ordinary, often disappointing, but they were transformed by God. Which of these characteristics most reveals why God can use you? Which one is it? Ordinary? Disappointing? I hope we'll see you back each week as we look at these men and see just how God can use ordinary people. We'll stop there for tonight and go to our prayer time.